high short kick that is going to come up and bounce at the 20. Rutgers has a chance to recover it, and they do! What a play by the Scarlet Knights!
Get it to Harper with three, with two, with one. Harper for the win! Got it!
10 and 10 at the 21. Wimsett hands it off. It's Manunga getting to the corner left. 20, 15, catching to 10. Manunga down near the goal line. He is in! Touchdown, Rutgers!
Now with six. Baker making his move with five. Step back three for the lead. Oh. Yeah! With 1.1 to go.
All right, I'm Aaron Brightman, Scarlet Faithful. It's officially the first day of the offseason for Rutgers men's basketball. Wanted to discuss a lot. I did a rapid reaction on Wednesday night as the season came to a sad conclusion. Disappointing performance against Maryland. Rutgers now ending the season on 7 of 8 losses. And it was very frustrating to see this team not be able to come through in certain spots down the stretch. And now we're at a pivotal point for the program, for the Steve Peichel era. And it's exciting, but it's also, I think it's fascinating in terms of where this offseason can go. So many different directions. We're going to be finding out about the roster soon. And Steve Peichel has already come out with comments, you know, after the Ohio State game in terms of learning from last offseason, and his approach. He mentioned after the loss yesterday, I was on the Zoom call, the press conference, and he said he was on a mission. He has urgency, and that's a good thing. So it's going to be really interesting to see, I think, Rutgers is going to do their very best to try to control the process as much as possible. I think they're a lot more prepared. They're a lot more organized. And, you know, it should be noted, and I discussed this some on my podcast earlier this week, just in terms of how rapidly things are changing in the middle of this year, the two-time transfer rule went away. So guys that were supposed to sit out all of a sudden could play. So that's how fluid the situation is. And I think Rutgers, you know, unfortunately, got caught as an example in terms of when Cam Spencer left, and I misstated it. He left after the undergraduate transfer window closed, and his value went up as a grad transfer, right? So all grad transfers' values went up at that point. And then Paul left after the early entry deadline, which value went up even more after that. So, but this year, you know, I think you're going to see the portal is going to be even more active, both from a college basketball perspective. You know, projections are saying anywhere from 70 to 80% of players. And again, I've said this before. I mean, NIL has changed everything. And NIL has created value. There's market value for players. And there's no real way to know what your market value is unless you test it. So a lot of players are going to do that now. And it's not necessarily indicative of their situation that there's an issue. And I think with Rutgers, it's going to be very interesting to see who tests the waters. You know, there could be some traditional reasons for leaving, you know, whether it's, you know, drop down a level and get more playing time, whether it's to go out there and see, you know, what other potential opportunities there are. So how Rutgers and the staff manage that, how they then also take this time to explore the portal and find options. I think you can never be proactive enough. You can never be, you know, stone unturned. I think Steve Peichel, where he's thrived in recruiting as a whole, and just wait one second here, you know, especially early on when his options were limited, is they've always had plan Bs, plan Cs, plan Ds. You know, when one guy doesn't work out, they have someone else that they've discovered. And, you know, they've had a lot of success with some under the radar guys, and of late they haven't. So I think it's fair to criticize the fact that the last two or three recruiting classes have not yielded the same success that Peichel had with the Geos and the Rons and the Calebs and You know, Miles Johnson, and obviously, you know, Cliff Paul, which were bigger name recruits when he got them in terms of rankings and all that. And that's part of the problem. And then, you know, it was complicated by losing Cam and Paul last year. But I think with everything needs to be looked at through the lens of NIL, because that's a great differentiator, a great dictator of the process. And the reality is that's a major factor in roster building these days. And it's easy to criticize. And, you know, I don't like the criticism of that the staff dropped the ball last offseason, that they should have been more prepared, that they gave, you know, guys more time than they should have. You know, like Mulcahy went through the NBA draft early intro process. He had the same amount of time that Cliff did. So that was common practice, you know. And now this year, I think it's going to be interesting to see how a lot of teams handle that, because you don't want to wait around till. I mean, I think they need to move up the draft early entry withdrawal deadline, because to wait to the end of May is crazy now. So I mean, obviously the NCAA, there's a lot of restructuring. You know, you could say that in terms of the business model and the way that, I mean, there's some teams out there that are able to essentially, you know, employ their teams in terms of how they pay NIL. There's other programs that, you know, only have enough for certain players, and managing that process is a whole thing of in and of itself. But I think for Rutgers, they know the timeline that hurt them last year. It's a different situation, especially if Cliff does ultimately leave. You really don't have anyone that's going to be, you know, entering the draft process. And if you do, I mean, it's no one with real, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be an issue this year. And you have the great recruiting class that's coming in. So you have an ability to formulate your roster. And that is a true advantage right now. As bummed as we all are that the season is over now, you know, on March 14th, before the madness even gets going, even before conference tournaments really start to cook, there is a significant advantage here that Rutgers can start rebuilding today, that, you know, conversations can start right away. The portal hasn't officially opened yet, but it's going to open next week. And even though there'll be, you know, a decent amount of teams still in the postseason, Rutgers is unlimited, uninhibited in terms of what they can do. So it's a huge advantage and something they have to take advantage of. They have to capitalize. How quickly things will move remains to be seen. Just in terms of the roster, you know, I think some interesting things to look at, you know, Cliff and Mag, there's a lot of speculation. It's been kind of, you know, and I've said, I feel like both players are going to leave. So I want to touch on the Mag situation. I haven't really touched on it. And this is kind of to my greater point about when things come out, right? That's one angle. But having the ability to kind of reflect the mirror and see all the angles, or at least consider potential angles, I think is important. And I think it's pretty clear based on comments from Mag, from Peichel, you know, there definitely seemed like there was hope that Mag would come back. He has the calf injury. You know, from what I understand, I mean, it wasn't a long-term injury, or the sense that he necessarily was out for a long period of time. I think there was some pain management involved. And ultimately, Mag said, you know, he didn't feel he was ready to play. Michael commented he even practiced the other day. I know there was a period he didn't even practice at all. But I think it's 100% fair to say that his absence greatly impacted the team down the stretch. Now, the circumstances or the situation involving his absence, you know, there's some different theories out there. You know, I've seen plenty of fans say he quit on the team. You know, the thought that it's a business decision, is preserving himself for the portal. You know, that's one perspective. There's another perspective that, you know, he came off major injury. He's more cautious and wanting to play hurt, and he wants to protect his value. You know, I think honestly, I don't know all the details. I'm just trying to look at it from all the sides. And I think it's one of those situations where you could understand all the different perspectives and feelings on both sides, right? And I mean, Gavin Griffiths spoke up and defended Mag in Brian Fonseca's article last night. You know, it's fair. Listen, I mean, nothing's black and white, right? Nothing's all this or all that. You know, it could have been mixed feelings in the clubhouse. Like, some players might have been behind him. Some players might have been frustrated he wasn't playing. It seems like the coaching staff is frustrated with the overall situation. Mag ultimately didn't play again. And I do think it's very likely he's entering the portal and his days are done at Rutgers. I think it's, first of all, needs to be acknowledged that he was a warrior for Rutgers. You know, he was a transformative defensive player at times. I think he developed some offensively, and he was the glue guy. I mean, he was very important for this program both last year and for this year, even a limited action. We played 17 games. I mean, if you think of it in this way, Rutgers only had Mag and Jeremiah Williams in the same lineup together. I think it was four games all season. So, I mean, people would say, oh, that's an excuse. But it's reality too, right? When you look at why this season went wrong, that's a factor. Whether you want to say it's an excuse or not, it happened, right? So if Mag was healthy and played the whole season, and if Jeremiah was healthy and played the whole season, I do feel like the season would have been different, you know? And then, yeah, Cam, I mean, people saying, oh, well, Cam, you know, wouldn't have made this team an NCAA team. Okay, but Cam would have led this team in shots. And he had the sixth best three-point shooting season in program history last year. He just made first team all Big East. He's shooting the lights out again. He would have gotten the bulk of the shots, you know, instead. And this is no disrespect to Derek Simpson, but he had a very, very, very poor shooting season. It's like, I have to look it up, but it's not good. And he was second on the team in shots. So that is an automatic value add that, you know, is logical to impacting the team. And I think for Derek's sake, you know, he had to play a bigger role than he really was going to play and was ready for. So it's a domino effect. And so there's nothing that's black and white. There's nothing that just automatic, okay, this happens, so that happens, so this happened. Things are more complicated than that. But going back to Mag, you know, it certainly impacted the team. Right or wrong, you know, it's a greater issue just in terms of NIL, in terms of contracts, in terms of, you know, commitment. Obviously, commitment to the program, but also commitment to your NIL. You know, there's been lots of talk about eventually this becoming an actual employee-employer relationship. Not really here to debate that, but what I'm saying is I think that some of that formality can bring clarity to some vagueness that, you know, is in this type of situation you saw. So I understand why everyone's frustrated. You know, I think everyone has the right to be frustrated. And Mag, listen, he has a right to protect his own interests, right or wrong. So I'm not excusing Mag. I'm not saying Rutgers is right. I think it's complicated and that none of us know the full details, right? But I think at the end of the day, you have to respect for what his contributions were. But it's also okay to be frustrated with how it seems like it's going to end. And that's how I look at it. I think Cliff, you know, you have to wish him well. It does seem like he's going to move on, whether that's, you know, ultimately in the pros or if he does go to another school. No matter where he ends up, you know, you have to thank him for his time. I talked about it some last night. But I think the most important thing is that at this point is that if they do move on, they move on quickly and Rutgers is prepared and can replace them with key pieces to fit together in this giant puzzle now that's the roster for next season. Going back to Derek Simpson, you know, Derek Simpson has some positive qualities. He had some good games, really good games at times. I think what's interesting on the roster right now is the backcourt. You have Jeremiah Williams, you have Jamichael Davis, you have Derek Simpson. None of them are true shooters. None of them are knockdown three-point shooters. They all have kind of similar skill sets. You know, Davis really struggled from the floor this year too. He emerges as an on-ball defender. Derek Simpson emerges as an on-ball defender. You know, Derek Simpson's 6'3", but he's kind of slight. Jermichael Davis is 6'1". Jeremiah's bigger, but, you know, he's not a three-point shooter per se. But they all kind of, you know, more so Simpson and Williams need the ball in their hands. But I'll be honest, I think, you know, you bring in Dylan Harper, and I saw somebody right today, he's going to be a wing. Dylan Harper is going to have the ball in his hands. Dylan Harper is going to be the floor general, the maestro, the point guard. Like, that's what he is. That's what he's going to be. 6'5", 6'6". He's going to be a big point guard, but he plays like a natural point guard. And I've said it before. I think that's Steve Peichel's. I really think he's been searching for that for a long time, and he's found it. But my point is, you need balance. Everything's got to fit together. And I don't know. I don't think that those four pieces all fit together the best that they could. You need shooters. And yes, you can have wing shooters, but I just don't think those other three guys all together make a lot of sense. So it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, Davis and Simpson are pretty similar. You know, Jermichael Davis isn't leaving because of his relationship with Ace Bailey, among other things. And the staff is really high on him, regardless of his own ability. So it's going to be interesting to see what Derek Simpson does. I mean, he could stay, you know, and he'd have to be willing to accept a smaller role. I think he can be, you know, a valuable piece further down the bench. But wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, explored greener pastures and more opportunity at a mid-major or a low major. And I think he could play a good role in a mid-major, and he could be a star at a low major, you know. But so that's an interesting decision away. And then I think you look at the front court with Igboli and Wolfolk, where I think they're kind of, you know, I mean, they're built differently, right? Igboli is bigger, but I don't see the value in really having both of them back. I think Wolf's probably more likely to leave just because, you know, he's played 2 years now, you know, with Lathan Somerville coming in, depending on what happens with Cliff. He's done some good things, but I don't think he's shown he's at a level where you can count on him to be a Big Ten starter. And when you enter your junior year, if you're not at that level, it's probably best to look at other options. And I feel like he's more likely to stick around simply because, you know, he's still coming off injury. He showed some flashes. He's raw. I think the staff's really high on him, but, you know, I don't know what opportunities necessarily would have that are better. And I think the staff would be happy with him to stay in a backup role. Gavin Griffith's a big question. You know, there was a comment in Brian Fonseca's post-game article that, you know, Griffiths confirmed he was, you know, likely to stay. I think it's a hard ask after a game in the locker room. I mean, I think all the players are going to say, yeah, they're probably likely to stay. No one's going to give you a firm definitive answer. I don't think even if they do, like, it's just in this day and age, like the way, you know, it's all dictated by NIL and value. You can't, your situation today is not going to be the same potentially in 2 months. And, you know, everyone has loyalty, but, you know, everyone's loyalty has a price too. And let's not kid ourselves. I mean, and that's, if you want to like kill a kid because, you know, they get a six figure offer, I'm not going to kill him for that. I mean, it stinks, right? I mean, what happened with Cam and Paul stunk. And, you know, it was a different situation. Cam was here 1 year. Paul, obviously, a four-year guy. But there's no guarantees. And I think the staff is going to try to control things the best they can and expedite the process the best they can. But, again, there's no guarantees. The only thing that's a guarantee is certain deadlines, like the undergraduate deadline to enter the portal. You know, the early withdrawal, like I said, there is no post-grad deadline. There is no two-time transfer rule. But I think if Cliff does leave, you obviously have to add a big out of the portal. And you have Lathan Somerville coming in. You know, someone I think misinterpreted, I probably didn't explain it well in terms of saying that Somerville wasn't physically ready for the Big Ten. I didn't mean that he wasn't. He's obviously, you know, a big body. I just think he has to fine tune. He has to get stronger. He has to get more cut, you know, for the Big Ten. It's a huge adjustment. And, you know, he's got a lot of mass, but he's got to refine his strength, I think, for the Big Ten. So I don't think it's fair to expect him to start. I know he had a great senior year, I really like his skill set. I'm really high on him long term. I think he could play a role next year, but I don't think it's fair to expect him to start. I think you got to bring in a transfer who can start. And, you know, maybe it's not a four-year high major guy that is going to demand 30 to 35 minutes. And it's a guy that has a lot of talent that, you know, maybe is a little less established that you can predict will probably start. But there's a real battle there. And maybe, you know, maybe they end up platooning. Maybe Somerville ultimately overtakes them. Maybe that person you bring in does, you know, assert themselves. But you give yourself some options there. Because the other thing in this, too, is, you know, the balance, the back end of the balancing act is that you can't bring in all these freshmen and then, you know, block them from opportunity. And yes, some of them are going to have to be patient. You know, they're not all Dylan and Ace in terms of one and done projected lottery picks. But you have to keep everybody interested. You know, roster management is at an all-time difficulty, not just in terms of NIL and bringing guys in, but, you know, managing egos because, you know that NIL impacts the locker room. It does. But also managing minutes and opportunity and, you know, getting a guy to, if a freshman comes in and they don't really play, you know, are they willing to stay the next year and develop? Or are they going to bolt? You know, you really have to, it's going to depend on the player. It's going to depend on the personality. It's going to depend on a lot of things. Again, there's no black and white. It's complicated in every situation. So that's something to watch for. Just looking at my notes here, I think aside from getting a big man, if Cliff does leave, you have to get shooters. Like I said, whether it's wing shooters, whether it's guard shooters, you know, do you get a stretch four, whatever it is. I mean, Ace obviously can shoot. I don't know. I mean, his skill set is so diverse and you know, he can shoot threes, but can he shoot 35 to 40% on 120 attempts? Maybe he can. You know, can Dylan? Maybe he can too. But the hope is if Gavin stays, which you hope, I want to say he's going to stay. I think if I had to guess, I'm more likely to say he stayed than not. But I don't think, again, if anybody tells you 100% they're staying, meaning like pundits, people on Twitter, randoms, whatever, I heard through this person or I know this or I know the family, you know, and they're going to stay their whole career. You're like, you can't say that. I'm sorry, but like, we don't know. They don't know. What they think today might change in a month. That's just the nature of college basketball and the transfer portal and NIL nowadays. It's real and it doesn't – it's going to change. And as we saw last year, it could change on a dime. Maybe that's a bad pun. I don't know. Money, whatever. But the hope is Gavin comes back. But you can't count on him to be a 40% three-point shooter. Now, he did finish the season strong. He finished 13 of 35 from – three in his last seven games, which is 37%. He was 18 of 75 in his first 25 games, which is 24%. So, you know, he made a leap in a lot of areas, I thought, down the stretch in the seven-game stretch. He was more confident. He was more comfortable. He was more in the flow of the offense. He was more aggressive. He was able to score inside a little bit. He was better defensively. He was more physical. He had, you know, a few instances where he got kind of picked on and matched up and put in isolation on the defensive end. And he, you know, held his own. He had some blocks. He had some stops. There's things he's got to work on. He's got to understand how the defense works as a whole. Help side defense has been an issue. You know, being more of an assertive defensive rebounder, boxing out, finding a body. All those things. It's going to take time, but he showed that things were starting to click. And I think he'd be a key piece next season, but I don't think that's a given. I think that he can be. He needs to develop. He needs to get stronger as well in the weight room. So I think you really need a big and you need shooters. You know, you really need to add. I'm not going to lie in my desire to get an Ivy League guy that can shoot. You know, and I know they've been linked to who's the guy from Penn, and I don't know any validity to this, how, you know, if this is serious or not, but Penn transfer Clark Slagert, you know, he's but he's 6'1", you know, so I think Rutgers needs to get more size in the backcourt, but he could play for sure, but I really like to see, you know, like a spot-up shooter. I think, you know, Dylan and Jeremiah Williams, they're going to need the ball in their hands. You need shooters. You need guys that can create space and that can knock down open looks and contested looks. You need guys that, you know, I mean, look at Northwestern. They have three or four guys that can hit from three. There's several Big Ten teams that have three, four, five guys that can all shoot threes. I mean, Rutgers had no one they could rely on this year. No one, not one. You have to have at least two for your ceiling as a team to expand, to rise. You have to have guys you can count on from three. You can't win games going 4 of 21. You got to make 7 to 8 threes a game. And you got to have the ability to get hot. And that's how sometimes teams make runs in March. They get hot from three and they're balanced, you know, and they can play. I think Rutgers, you know, pace. We're talking about pace. I mean, if you ever watch some of the other leagues, I mean, I watched Baylor, Texas a couple weeks ago. I mean, it was insane. It was not the same sport. The pace of play, the athleticism on the court was off the charts. It was a track meet. And Rutgers didn't come close to that this year. They were good in transition. They didn't do it enough, but they also weren't good enough. They couldn't finish well enough. You know, Rutgers really struggled at the rim, finishing, drawing contact. That's got to change, and I think that's got to be a priority in how you recruit as well. So you have to improve the athleticism. You have to improve the talent, and you have to improve the balance. You need a more balanced backcourt. You need a more balanced roster. How is everybody going to fit together? How is the rotation going to fit? You know, it can't just be 12 guys, roll out the ball, and let's see who wins a position. You know, you have to have – and I thought that that's what the 24 recruiting class, it's been well thought out. I think Dylan and Ace and Somerville, those are three very good pieces that fit together that all have different skill sets. Ace, more of a wing, that's dynamic scorer. Can be a rim defender as well. Lathan, you know, is kind of a stretch big that has some ball skills that can shoot, but he can bang inside too. And then Dylan is kind of the playmaker who can do it all you know, is unselfish as well. So those three fit like a glove, in my opinion. And now it's fitting the pieces around it. You know, Jeremiah Williams, how can he fit into that? I think he can. I think, you know, his size, his defense, you know, it's got to mesh with Dylan in terms of, but, you know, maybe it gives Dylan some more versatility. He could play off the ball a little bit at times if Jeremiah could take it. So I think it's a lot to make work, you know, and Pykel seems up for the challenge. He seems to recognize the uniqueness of this opportunity with this class coming in and what's at stake and what needs to be done. And he's got to build a roster that makes sense. He's got to build you know, obviously chemistry on the court, off the court. But the pieces have to fit. Just see if I missed anything here. I think in terms of just talking about NIL, I think Rutgers has NIL. I think in terms of Ace and Dylan, you know, they have a certain they are in their own stratosphere in everything, in their talents, in their buzz, in how they have been projected in the NBA, but also just in terms of their marketability. I think that, you know, I saw something somewhere where it was like, how did Rutgers attract all this NIL for them? And I think Rutgers attracted Ace and Dylan, and Ace and Dylan want to be at Rutgers. And the NIL kind of, I do think that Rutgers generated some NIL for them. I don't think it's collective related because we know that, you know, the Knights of the Raritan focus on retaining players. You know, there's donors out there. I have my theories, but there's definitely some, you know, I mean, Dylan signed with Fanatics. I mean, Fanatics was going to sign Dylan no matter where he went. You know, where is Adidas involved? I think they might be. You know, Adidas would probably be involved wherever they went. Regardless, you know, the other thing is them being lottery picks. I mean, NIL is important to everybody, but, you know, some of these guys that, you know, enter the portal, they're looking for that one payday. Dylan and Ace, this is going to be their first of what they hope is a very long NBA career and many paydays. So they didn't necessarily go to the highest bidder. You know, they went somewhere they want to develop where they have relationships, where they think they can succeed and that will challenge them and get them ready for the next level. And if anything you take away from this podcast, for all the people that are doubting Pykel and having concerns, and listen, it's natural, right? It was a disappointing season. I think there's some explainable reasons for it, but I understand the concern and the downward trend of the last 2 years. But if Dylan and Ace are putting their futures in the hands of Steve Peichel and the coaching staff, shouldn't there be value and equity and credibility in that? Shouldn't we all take a step back and say, you know what? We're fans. We want to win. We're upset. But two of the best players in the country signed with Steve Peichel. They could have gone anywhere, but they're coming to Rutgers. They're not coming to Rutgers because Rutgers offered the biggest NIL package. There's no way. Don't live in a fantasy land. And that goes for how Peichel can build in the portal. You know, when you judge recruiting and you say it's been disappointing, which is fair, you have to include NIL in that too. That you lose recruiting battles nowadays in part because of NIL. So there is a certain ceiling for Rutgers in terms of what they can get in the portal versus other programs. I don't believe that there's like this open checkbook because Ace and Dylan are coming here that they can just get throw money at whoever who they want. You know, they're not. I mean, and look at Miami, look at Indiana, look at Arkansas. All those teams reportedly spent $3, $4, $5 million on their roster, and they're all having poor years. None of them are going to make the NCAA tournament. So NIL doesn't guarantee anything, but it certainly raises the possibilities in the transfer portal that I don't think Rutgers is going to be able to just get anyone. They're going to have to be creative. You know, they always look at the JUCO ranks. They're going to look at every stone unturned. Maybe they look, you know, at a late high school recruit. I don't think, you know, you can count on too many. You're not going to play a Fab Five next season. You need experience. You need veterans. You need proven talent. But I think that if you have any takeaway with Ace and Dylan coming to Rutgers, it's not because they're getting the biggest NIL deal at Rutgers. It's because they trust Steve Peichel and the coaching staff, and they want to be here. And they believe in the program and the development process and how they're going to get ready for the next level. And it doesn't guarantee any success next season as a team. Threading the needle, developing them as players, and threading the needle to be a successful team are kind of two different things. Dylan and Ace could develop at Rutgers, and the team might not be the best. So how is Peichel going to – but I think it would benefit their development if they have all the right pieces around them. And as a team, they have true success. And, you know, it's going to be – I mean, they're going to be rock and roll stars next season. So I think Peichel understands the weight of the moment, the importance of the moment, and I think that that's an exciting thing. And I think the disappointment of the last 2 years is a motivating factor for him, for the program, and they want to get it right. And, again, if you've lost faith in him in the program, remember that two of the best players in the country have all the faith in him. And last year's offseason, you know, even though they went overseas and everything, I mean, they were still building the roster in August. If they have the roster set in April, you know, Dylan lives nearby. You know, Ace is going to finish high school in the South probably late May. I mean, you could have the whole roster together in May. That would be huge. And they were dealing with health issues in the offseason last year. You know, if they can get, as a team, be together for the whole summer, that's huge. That's huge. So there's a lot to look for. There's a lot to watch for. Just want to make sure I didn't miss anything. I probably did, but it's going to be a long offseason. I'll have plenty of these episodes. I hope you found this useful. But I just think in everything, you know, you have to look at all the angles. And nothing is black and white. And you have to sort through all of it. And I'm going to do my best to help do that. And this is the only daily Rutgers podcast there is. This is the 16th episode I have for you in 12 days, totally free on every podcast platform you have. I hope you don't look at me just as quantity, but quality as well. I'm excited for the offseason ahead. I'm excited for where this program is headed. And I hope you go on that journey with me. Thank you so much for listening to the Scarlet Faithful podcast once again.